You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
Fabinho getting it away from the challenger Barnes. Matip stretching out a leg, firing it forward. Goal number two for Diogo Jota.
So all Liverpool can do is keep applying the pressure on City, and that's exactly what they did with 3 points against Leicester. Thiago, Diaz, Jota, all shining on a massive night at Anfield. I'm Steve Hoversall, and the Red Agenda includes James Pearce, and a massive welcome as well to Paul Machin from Red Men TV for the next half hour. James, that most Liverpool fans watching that game are thinking, wow, what an amazing array of attacking talent Jurgen Klopp has at his disposal. But I want to start with the man who you concentrated your feature piece on, which was Thiago, because this was sensational. This is what Liverpool bought Thiago for.
Yeah, it really was. And we haven't seen enough of it, have we, in the last 17 months? I think when you think back to, was it September 2020? You know, the euphoria that accompanied his arrival from Bayern Munich. And since then, it's been very, very stop-start. I think we've seen flashes of brilliance. But yeah, I thought last night was as influential as he's been in a game for Liverpool all the way through. I think you could see that he looked fit, he looked healthy, sharp. I think also, you know, really eager to try and make up for this lost time, because, you know, even when you go back to last season, you know, getting COVID, then getting the bad knee injury when he was, you know, on the receiving end of that horrible challenge from Richarlison, then coming back into a team in kind of January time that had completely lost its way. You know, the structure of the team had gone to pieces with the injuries. And then I thought he finished last season really brightly. But again, this season, you know, the calf injury, you know, another bout of COVID, the hip problem, he just hasn't been able to get that kind of rhythm and fluency. And yeah, you just hope now he can really kick on from here, because he just gives that midfield a new dimension when he operates at those kind of levels.
Yeah, because it's been a relatively difficult journey so far, Paul. I mean, I think obviously James mentioned there that the injuries, but stop start. But you have to say he's adapted terrifically well, hasn't he?
Yeah, and I think not just adapted on the pitch, but integrated as well. He seems very, very happy and at home on Merseyside. You know, he just seems to be loving life. There's just something about a player who clearly wants to throw himself into the culture, both on and off the pitch. And yeah, he's just special, isn't he? There's just something about Thiago and the certain footballers who I think you can watch for a handful of moments and automatically know you're watching a genuinely world-class player. And Liverpool actually don't have loads of truly silky footballers. They've got a lot of really awkward footballers, I think. You know, it's a very money ball thing about like players who don't necessarily pass the eyeball test in the same way. You know, people who don't look like they should be brilliant, but ultimately are. But Thiago is the exact opposite of that. He's just silky. He, like Roberto Firmino being an example of that. Virgil's got a bit of that. He is just a tremendous, tremendous footballer. There's just, yeah, he's a joy. He's a joy to behold on the pitch.
Yeah, the elements that really shone last night for you, James, not just the passing.
No, I thought he was as impressive without the ball as he was with it. I think only Fabinho won the ball back on more occasions across the 90 minutes. I think, and that side of his game has definitely improved. I think, you know, he did come in for some stick, didn't he, last season, where he gave away a lot of cheap free kicks and picked up some needless bookings by going to ground too easily. And, you know, and I think there was a period of adaptation there, but he just was so streetwise and smart, I thought, against Leicester. You know, time and time again in the right place at the right time. And then, you know, his quality with the ball at his feet has never really been in any doubt, has it? And I think even that has probably changed and developed over time as well, because, you know, I think there were occasions last season where he did slow the play down and probably have too many touches. Yet, you can see that's something they've worked on. I thought he was very progressive against Leicester, you know, that he kept on trying to make things happen. You know, I think his pass completion rate was at like 92%. No one could get close to that on the night. And I just think him and Fabinho, you know, the stats are remarkable, really, when the two of them play together. I think they've only played 17 games together as midfielders. I think when you discount the period where obviously Fabinho was utilised as a makeshift centre half, and it's 16 wins and one draw. You know, of course, there's other factors at play as well, but you know, there is a reason for that. I just think they do fit really, really well together, because you've got, you know, the steel provided by Fabinho and the real silk and quality of Thiago. And if they both keep performing at that kind of levels, then I think when the big games come along between now and May, you know, that will be two-thirds of Klopp's midfield and the rest are playing for the other spot.
You can't leave them out, can you? I mean, look, we'll talk about competition for players in the places in the attacking roles in a moment. But in terms of that midfield, and as James has just mentioned, Paul, these lads form the basis of what you want to see in the Liverpool midfield. And then you've got others vying for that third place.
Yeah, absolutely. And there'll be lads still testing Fabinho. There'll be lads testing Thiago. I mean, I thought it was interesting last night that Thiago starts on the right of the midfield three, which was unexpected. He, you know, largely plays on the left, or certainly this season for Liverpool, and the idea that Curtis Jones started over there, and the interchanged quite nicely in between that, which speaks to the flexibility, which means that Liverpool can very much adopt, I think, a horses for courses sort of approach for the rest of the season, having a lot of different sort of weapons in their arsenal, arrows in the quiver, or however you want to describe it, really. And although, yeah, I would largely agree, I think the best midfield three is probably still, on paper certainly, Fabinho, Thiago and Henderson. But the idea that you could almost change, you could change two of those three at any given week and bring in another couple of lads and not see the level drop and actually bring a whole new dimension to how Liverpool play, I think that's the thing that's most exciting about the midfield options.
Well, of course, Paul, as well, Harvey's throwing a different question mark against it all as well, isn't it? An entirely different sort of player who I think the fans desperately want to see game in, game out now.
Yeah, I absolutely completely agree with that. And that's the thing about him. He's such a good talent that we've almost, the fact that he's ended up psychologically in our pecking order above Curtis Jones, who's a, you know, another incredible talent, homegrown lad as well, scouser for the team. And in any other sort of era, we would be desperate to see him in every single game. But, you know, we're spoiled for choice, and Harvey Elliott is that good. Like Jordan Henderson, a great example of this, who has been, you know, not just a magnificent servant, which sounds a bit like I'm damning him with faint praise. He's been the driving heartbeat of this football team for the entirety of the Jurgen Klopp era, really. And he might find his place in jeopardy because there's an 18-year-old kid who's just coming in and taking the place by storm. And the good thing about this is that there's no world in which, because of the character of the squad that's been assembled, this actually doesn't drive them onto, you know, increased and better levels, really, because there's so much of the right type of spirit and competitive nature amongst those players that, yeah, it bodes incredibly well for what they're trying to achieve this season, really.
We spoke, didn't we, on the last pod, James, about the incredible luxury that Jurgen's got at the moment in terms of competition for places. He's had a couple of press conferences where he's referenced it. He must be feeling pretty bullish about his options.
Yeah, although it's funny listening to him when it does come up in conversation, because you can see that he's loath to kind of really talk about what a fantastic position he finds himself in, because I think he knows to his cost that the moment you do that, that's probably when you get a message off one of the medical staff to say that someone's got an issue, and then the landscape can change very quickly. So, but yeah, it's, you know, of course, Jordan Henderson was missing against Leicester due to a minor back problem, but in his press conference a couple of hours ago, he confirmed that Henderson is now, you know, that the plan was to rest him in midweek and then play him against Burnley on Sunday, and that remains the plan. He also confirmed that Joe Gomez and Divock Origi, who didn't even make the 20-man squad against Leicester, said, you know, there's no issues there. They are both fit and healthy, and that just shows you like the incredible depth he's got at his disposal at the moment. I think we'll see rotation at Turf Moor on Sunday, because I think he'll want fresh legs, and I think we've seen it before this season. He really does believe in the options he's got. You know, and probably now more than ever, he's got some fantastic, nice decisions to make across the pitch, hasn't he? When you think, you know, Sadio Mane back training at Kirby today, you know, he'll come into contention. You know, do you bring him back into the side on Sunday? You know, I'm sure we'll talk about Luis Diaz and his, you know, what a dazzling Premier League debut that was from him. You know, Mo Salah, an absolute man on a mission when he stepped off that bench in the second half. Jota can't stop scoring. And then, you know, the midfield options as well. When you think, you know, Naby Keita, you know, remained on the bench. You've got Milner, you've got Oxlade-Chamberlain, you know, those minutes for Harvey Elliott. And then even further back where, you know, I thought Matip and Van Dijk were absolutely immense as a double act again against Leicester. But, you know, you've got Konate and Joe Gomez champing at the bit for more game time too.
Let's talk about the front line then. And this is where management is hard, isn't it? I mean, how on earth do you choose, Paul, three players from what is potentially six without upsetting proper world-class talent?
Yeah, no, honestly, I mean, and that's the only saving grace here. And I say, like, it's a bad thing. There's four competitions to play for, effectively. You know, Liverpool have got a wealth of riches available to them, but they've got a wealth of competitions to vie for at the same time. And I think that's probably what's going on there and what the answer will be to that. I mean, it's just interesting, you know, we talk a lot about Diaz and Mane and Salah and Jota and Firmino. Minamino comes off the bench, you know, again, he's been the cup goal king for Liverpool so far this season. You know, he's got seven, which when you consider he's probably the most sort of maligned of the attacking options that Liverpool have got, and yet he's delivering above and beyond what, you know, a lot of first choice options are for teams that would, you know, consider themselves to be rivals in the, you know, in the league and the cups with Liverpool, really. So, yeah, I mean, the honest answer is that there will be people who I guess will have their noses put out of joint in the long term, but in the short term, if you're saying no, go as hard as you can for as long as you can. Opportunities will present themselves, and when the big opportunities come, you know, Liverpool get to the biggest games. Liverpool get to Champions League semi-finals and finals, or crunch decisive Premier League games, or, you know, an FA Cup final, or of course the League Cup final. That's what you're playing for. You're playing for the chance to be in there. And the only other, I guess, the good thing about those competitions, five subs. In the Premier League, it will be tough to get a game. You know, we saw how many talented footballers just weren't going to get a sniff last night at all. But in those cup competitions, all of a sudden, you know, Liverpool could theoretically change the entire front three in a football match and bring on another front three that's just as likely to beat it as the one that they've taken off.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let's talk about the Leicester game, and obviously a league debut, James, for Luis Diaz, but Diogo Jota stealing the show. And this is someone who, he's an absolute jewel. He always seems to be in the right place. I had a chat with Aldo afterwards. I said, it's a bit like you, isn't it? He was always just in the right place. And that's what you're getting from Jota at the moment. What's he on, 17 in the season in all comps now?
Yeah, 17 in all comps. And I think the only time in his career he's bettered that was when he was actually in the Championship with Wolverhampton Wanderers. So certainly at the top level, this is the most prolific season of his life. And you know, you just think how many could he go on and get, because you know, there's no reason why he shouldn't be certainly getting to 25 and even potentially 30. I think only Mo Salah has outscored him in the Premier League this season. And I think the beauty of Jota is that just the sheer array of goals that he scores as well. You know, the two against Leicester were proper poacher's efforts. They were Aldridge-esque, weren't they, in terms of sensing those openings. And you know, it was a great header from Van Dijk for the first one. I think, you know, clearly that was something they'd really worked on, because Leicester I think Leicester have shipped more goals from set pieces than anyone else in the Premier League this season. You know, it was a real Achilles heel, and you know, reacted really smartly to put it away. And then, you know, the second one, the same again. You know, a brilliant assist from Joel Matip, but again, you know, clinical with the finish. You know, Schmeichel denied Liverpool, you know, time and time again last night. Without him, it really would have been 4 or 5, because Liverpool were that dominant, especially second half. You know, of course, he got a hand to that one, but couldn't keep it out. And you can just see how much Jota is enjoying himself in that system at the minute. And again, you know, when the big games come along, you know, it's the conversation about who fills those forward spots at the minute. He is an absolute shoo-in. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens on the left-hand side between Diaz and Mane, when Mane's, you know, refreshed and back up to speed. Of course, Salah has got the right side nailed on. But, you know, at the minute, I don't think there's much competition in terms of Jota getting the nod ahead of Firmino.
What Jota seems to have is that ability to unlock games. And we've seen quite a few games, Paul, where Liverpool have maybe, I won't say laboured, but you see the first 20, 25 minutes and you're thinking, why have they not made the breakthrough? And then all of a sudden, he scores. And actually, that game against Leicester, it's the 10th time this season he scored the first goal in a game.
There's been a handful of very sort of generic or oft-used criticisms of Liverpool under Jurgen Klopp. And often it's the Liverpool need a clinical centre-forward. They need a proper number nine, in inverted commas. And that always comes about when Liverpool, yeah, if they don't get across the line in games, which, let's be honest, has been pretty rare actually in the last sort of four seasons, the weirdness of last year notwithstanding. But that's what Jota is. He's predatory. You know, I think the Aldo comparisons are absolutely apt. I think, you know, there's been Fowler comparisons. He's got very Michael Owen like hallmarks for me, Suarez style things. And the thing that typifies all these guys is they are and were world class when it came to being in the right place at the right time. Look at where he takes his shots from, where he scores his goals from, Diogo Jota. He can play from the left, and we saw it last night, play from the right for a lot of that game, but he ends up between the sticks. He ends up in the best place to be to get the best possible chance of scoring. You know, if you work out a map of the 18-yard box and the XG rating from those positions, he's where you want to be when he scores those goals. And yeah, I don't think anyone expected that when they brought him in, but he's certainly become that. And Liverpool own Mohamed Salah, the best player in the world. He's free scoring and has been for years now. But there's a chance Jota might be a better finisher than Salah, which sounds nuts because Salah's got more goals. But Jota's goal scoring rate is accelerating. You know, I thought he might be a 1 in 3 sort of footballer, to be honest, when we, you know, the start of this season, certainly. But he's, you know, and for Liverpool now, he's already 1 in 2, and you could see that getting better. And that's, you know, for Liverpool, outstanding, but for opposition defences, terrifying.
Do you actually think, Paul, that his story is being understated because he's playing in a team with arguably the best player in the world in Mo Salah?
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, I think when you want to be one of the truly top teams, you need two, minimum. I think you need two guys who are going to bang the goals for you. Liverpool's 13-14. Luis Suarez steals all the plaudits, all the headlines. But Daniel Sturridge is the other one. He's scoring at a top quality goal scoring rate. It was just that Suarez was scoring at a superhuman goal scoring rate. So yeah, I think a touch, but I think it's telling that the way the Liverpool fans have taken to Jota. Look, I'd say of the songs sung last night at Anfield, 60% of them was the Diogo Jota song on repeat, getting louder and louder. You know, the guy next to me said to me, I haven't got the hymn sheet for this one yet. Is this a new one? And by the end, he's singing along because you couldn't not know every word to it because, he's becoming the cop's new star. And I think the plaudits from outside of Anfield will follow in due course.
And for anyone who doesn't know those words, so I photographed the hymn sheet that James put on his article a couple of weeks ago, and then I was WhatsApping it to people next to me because there's still loads of people who can't get the words, is there? It's not straightforward.
Are you going to sing it for us, Steve?
No, I still haven't mastered that. I can't remember them all properly. I can't get the tone right. Let's go from him to Luis Diaz, and sensational. You think to yourself, why is he getting chosen so quickly after arriving at Liverpool? And then he displays why that is. Because he's clearly got the confidence. The way he's interacting with his teammates pre-match, post-match, he's just settled in straight away, James.
Yeah. And it was interesting hearing Klopp talk about how they've deliberately not kind of overburdened him with tactical information and wanted him to kind of play with freedom. And I think you can see already that the kind of huge body of work that goes into recruiting players at Liverpool, the fact that, you know, I don't think with him there is a massive amount he needs to change because he ticks so many of the boxes. That was why, you know, they moved so quickly to sign him at the end of the window when suddenly Porto dropped their asking price and they realised that there was a serious danger that Tottenham were going to sign him because stylistically he does look every inch a Jurgen Klopp footballer. And Klopp said earlier, you know, he was struggling to remember anyone in their first start as a new player at a club delivering at that kind of level and looking the part. You have to kind of check that excitement a little bit and think, you know, we don't want to overburden the guy in terms of expecting far too much too soon. You know, sometimes there is that kind of like amazing kind of buzz and that comes with joining a new club, and then we'll have to wait to see whether he can sustain it. But I think we've seen enough already to know that he's going to add, you know, a huge amount to what is already a very, very gifted squad. I think what we've seen already, he's not anything like kind of what you would describe as an old-fashioned winger. He's very clever at coming inside and finding pockets of space, and that's why I think at times we will see both him and Sadio Mane in the same starting lineup. I don't think going forward it's going to be a case of either or, because, you know, I think Diaz can play centrally and will play centrally at times. You know, he's obviously used to playing left and cutting in onto his right. But yeah, everything was there that you'd want to see in terms of, you know, the belief in himself, the pace, the skill to run at defenders, to make things happen. And just as important in this Klopp system, you know, that tireless work rate and work ethic in terms of when Liverpool don't have possession.
I think he expects a lot from himself. You could see that from the way he played. But how quick is he, Paul? I reckon he might be the quickest player Liverpool have got now.
Yeah, it's probably not far off. It'd be very interesting to see when the season's all done and dusted and let them all just have a big foot race and see who comes out on top. I think that's, you know, Liverpool's YouTube channel's been very good over the last few years. I think they're missing out on a major piece of content there. I totally agree with everything James said there, by the way, as well. And, you know, the pace, yeah, and I think, if, you know, if he's only as fast as Salah and Mane, then that's amazing. If he happens to be a bit faster, great, it's another Arsenal weapon. You could see that Liverpool were looking to release him early a few times just to test that out, just to let him stretch his legs a bit. You know, teams don't often leave Liverpool a lot of space in behind to utilise, so, you know, having that extra burst of pace over a short distance could be telling for him. But it's the all-round play, it's the all-round work ethic. They were trying to kick lumps out of him last night, and I kind of love the fact that he was bouncing up instantly because he just wanted to give them no change. And I actually wonder whether there was a little word in his ear at half time that said, you could actually probably get them a couple of yellow cards here, mate, if you just stayed down for a second or two after the challenge. And there was one early in the second half where he did just take a moment just to kind of soak it up on the deck for a minute before picking himself back up again, because I think he's got a point to prove. I think he wants to show that he's not just a fancy player, you know, a luxury player. He's got a real gnarl about his play, and I thought that was really evident. A couple of really good, like, tracking back, sliding tackles, even actually on the edge of their penalty area to keep attacks alive. He looks like he wants to kill the opposition, and that is a very, you know, it's a very Jurgen Kloppy thing, isn't it? It's one of the things that we think typifies Liverpool's players, not just being great technicians, but also willing to die for the cause, fight for every loose ball. And again, you can see it already, we've said it about Jota, it won't be long before he's got a song, it won't be long before he feels like the next sort of, in a, what's now a very long line of Liverpool icons that have been constructed under Klopp.
Yeah, I've got to direct you all to James's piece on Diaz, which sort of charts the history of his journey so far. Really good. You had a chat with Marco Grujic, who was playing with him at Porto. Talked about the areas in which he's excelled.
Yeah, and that was an area that he highlighted, that, you know, that defensive side of his game. He said, you know, that for him is what the biggest difference is between the Diaz of this season and the Diaz he played with last season, when, of course, he was still on loan then from Liverpool to Porto, and Porto then subsequently bought Grujic. But Yeah, he was. You know, he's a lovely guy, Marco Gruic, and always speaks so well. And he was. It was interesting that he said, you know, after the Champions League game against Porto in late November, he said, you know, members of Liverpool's recruitment staff collared him and said, you know, can we ask you about Diaz? You know, what kind of character is he? What's he like around the place? Because we know for Klopp and for Michael Edwards and Julian Ward, you know, that character side of it is just as important as the ability side in terms of how someone is going to fit into that group. You know, why the spirit and the unity is so good is because, you know, there's a lot of superstars in that dressing room, but no egos that are out of control, and you don't want to change that. But Gruic's words of advice to Liverpool were essentially, you know, you're talking about someone who's quiet and humble and completely dedicated to his profession that would enhance any group of lads, he said. So and I think we've kind of seen signs of that already in terms of how quickly his teammates have taken to him. He doesn't speak much English, but you know, there's enough Spanish speakers there and Portuguese speakers to help him get by at the minute. And it was interesting speaking to an array of people for that piece who kind of know the real Luis Diaz, in terms of obviously Marco Gruic having played alongside him. Julio Comesana, fascinating guy who gave him his debut for Atletico Junior in Colombia, talking about, you know, what he was like as a young player and what set him apart from so many of the other youngsters was, you know, that willingness to learn and to really dedicate himself to it. He had some great words of advice for him in terms of, you know, just saying, you know, my biggest hope is that he doesn't get carried away with the fame and the extra money and the superstar status that comes with a move to Liverpool, that he retains those kind of characteristics that have got him this far. And you know, and right down to, you know, chatting to TV presenters in Colombia and the Colombian Reds, which I think that supporters group is swelling significantly on the back of Diaz's move, because this is a huge deal in Colombia. You know, their national team is enduring, you know, an absolutely miserable run at the minute. You think of people like Falcao and James Rodriguez, who are kind of past their best. Diaz is the big hope for an entire nation. You know, his move to Liverpool and the way he started off has lifted not just Liverpool fans around the world, but Colombian football fans in general.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Don't know whether you saw just pre-kickoff and the You Never Walk Alone was out there, and obviously everyone's in the emotion of it all. I was watching Diaz, as a lot of people would have done, and Alison Becker went over to him, Paul, for what seemed like a good 30 seconds, minute in his ear. And I thought straight away, he's got his network there.
Yeah.
And I'd love to know what Alison was talking to him about.
Yeah, he's going, get high, get wide, and I'm going to kick the ball to you as quickly as possible. Probably the long and short of it. But no, but I think that's a good point, and you know, kind of circling back on him, you know, and how well he started. This is a good point, that he's got a good network of people around him between the Portuguese speakers and the Spanish speakers in the squad, of course. But yeah, you know, Liverpool and how Liverpool have been constructed over these years, it's the fine margins of football that have helped to propel them to the true top of the game. And that comes from a deeper level of understanding that's been grown, you know, game week on game week, training session after training session, and just understanding each other as players and as men fundamentally. He's this good, and he, like Andy Robertson basically said, like, we basically can't communicate to each other because I can't speak Spanish and he can't speak effectively Scottish, you know, and they're able to play at that level already. You know, by the end of the summer, when he's had a little bit more time to integrate and catch up, and the language barrier gets, you know, smaller and smaller, imagine just how good he could end up being.
There was a lad called Salah playing. He wasn't bad. James, he's not often he comes like fourth, fifth down in our list of subjects to talk about. When he came on, he clearly had the bit between his teeth with a point to prove, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't think any of us would have been too surprised, would we, that I don't think there was ever going to be a hangover from the heartache of losing that AFCON final. I think if anything, it was just going to make him even more determined to achieve great things with Liverpool this season and take out his frustration on top flight defences. I think it was I don't quite know how Salah ended up not adding to his goal tally, because he could easily have had a hat-trick in that second half with just how involved he was. I mean, it was so nearly another very, very special one for the collection, wasn't it? But that turn and piece of skill to wriggle his way out of what looked like an impossible situation, and Schmeichel denied him when the angle was tight, and then he had, you know, obviously there was the curler that struck the angle of post and bar with the keeper having absolutely no chance, and the pouncing on the defensive mistake and running through when he was thwarted by the keeper, and one of those strange quirks of the laws of football where then Amati can absolutely clatter into him, but because Salah's already got the shot off, it's like, oh, that's absolutely fine, you can do whatever you want because he's got the shot off. So you just knew as well, looking at Salah's face on that bench, you know, he wouldn't have been happy about, you know, he would have been desperate to start that game. That would have really annoyed him, you know, the fact he's not used to being on the bench, is he? So, you know, I think it's probably a delicate situation for Klopp in terms of, you know, like with Mane back around today, it's kind of like you're tempering that absolute delight for Sadio Mane for, you know, being a, you know, what he's achieved for Senegal, with obviously the fact that, you know, you've on, you know, next to him is a guy in the squad who's so massively influential and important, who was on the other, you know, the shoe was on the other foot for him in terms of that agony of losing the final. But yeah, certainly no damaging repercussions for Liverpool Salah wise. I think you know, no doubt he will start at Burnley on Sunday and he'll carry on where he left off against Leicester.
Paul, this title race thing, is it happening?
Yeah, well, until it's completely dead and buried, wouldn't it be, I think, psychologically from Liverpool's perspective, it'd be nice to actually feel like the gap is being closed, not that every game is just returning it back to sort of that 9-point par that they're at the moment, really. But I think Jürgen Klopp's diplomatic response to it has been the best way to sort of treat it at the moment, is we're not really Man City's business until they are. You know, that's not going to happen at the weekend, it's not going to happen, you know, next week. I mean, it could, if City start losing games, you know, it will become Liverpool's business very, very quickly, of course. But while hope exists, I see no reason not to be perfectly honest. While there's still Man City to play, and if Liverpool can continue to just churn over the games, churn over some more points, get some more wins on the board, why not? You know, why not? And we'll see what the pressure feels like on Man City's shoulders in when, you know, they eventually play each other. I think it's in April. What the situation lies like that. But the beauty is there's so many nice distractions in the meantime. There's other big games of football. You know, there's the Champions League coming back next week. There's the League Cup final. There'll be FA Cup games. You make your focus then. And if you can just keep the league ticking over in the meantime, it means that they're not, the players aren't all totally obsessed with Manchester City, and I think that's a much healthier position for Liverpool's squad to be in than Man City squad, because I think Man City squad will be keeping an eye on Liverpool far more. They'll feel as though that gap should be bigger, and every time it goes to 12 points and then it goes back to 9, it will feel like City have somehow lost something, whereas Liverpool will probably feel as though they're just keeping on a very even keel at the moment. So yes, why not? We live in hope.
Yeah, and even though the points difference looks massive, James, it just feels like there's, I don't know, the points difference seems bigger than actually the thought in Liverpool fans' heads about whether they can catch Man City.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is Liverpool just have to ensure that they're still in that mix when they go to the Etihad in early April. I think Liverpool have got 7 Premier League games between now and then, and there's no reason why they can't go and win those 7, and you just want to crank up the pressure a bit. That's all you can do. You know, as Klopp keeps saying himself, you know, he's playing it down, because I think, you know, 9 points with a game in hand, it's still a big ask, you know, and it's not in Liverpool's hands. All they can do is try and turn up the pressure and make City have to keep on getting the job done, and we know that is difficult in the Premier League, as magnificent a team as City are, and with what depth they had, you know, you don't get too many gimmies in the Premier League. So yeah, just stay on their coattails, and then, you know, ensure that there is something big riding on that game at the Etihad. I think, what is it, April 9th, I think it is.
Guys, that's been great fun. Thank you very much indeed. Paul, superb to have you on. Loads of stuff on the Redmen TV at the moment, including prediction on the Burnley starting 11. There's always another game. Check it out. But two brilliant features as well on The Athletic that James has written on, Diaz and Jota. And thank you very much for listening to The Red Agenda. We'll catch up with you next time.